ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
वासुदेवाय।
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नरं चैव नरोत्तमम्
नरं चैव नरोत्तमम्
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्
ततो जयमुदीरयत्
ततो जयमुदीरयत्
नस्तप्रायेषु अवत्रेषु
नस्तप्रायेषु अवत्रेषु
नित्यं भागवत
सेवया
भागवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति
नैष्ठिकी।
This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Ramachandra Rules the World, text number 21. Raja and Tama. So, only a devotee of the Lord, or in this case, Maryada Purushottam, Lord Ramachandra, only such personalities are completely free. Apapa vidam. Spotless. And the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us an idea about the qualities and characteristics of such personalities. Therefore, it is also called Amala Purana, Spotless Purana. So it is beneficial for us to read about Lord Ramchandra and hear how, right from his very childhood, he was the perfect son of his father, Dasara. He was the most loving brother, although he was senior to Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. And yet, he treated them exactly as equals. We know of another example, Duryodhana, who was very inimical and envious of everyone. And because he was the senior of the Kauravas, he planned in so many mischievous ways to establish himself over the Pandavas. Actually, the Pandavas, Bhadana was envious. Therefore, the whole Kurukshetra war took place simply because of one envious leader. Whereas here we find Lord Ramachandra is exactly the opposite. In fact, he had so much love and affection for his parents, especially his father, that even when his father was put into the difficult position of having to banish him to the forest, he accepted it very lovingly. In fact, he worshipped his father for standing on dharma rather than family affection. His father could have easily told everyone that although I have promised my wife that I will give her these boons, but these boons that she has asked for are not at all respectable, therefore I reject them. And no one would have cared. In fact, people would have been happy. But the problem is that in the future, not understanding the situation exactly, people would take example that Dasarath made a promise and broke his promise, and a leader can never do that. A man is as good as his word, his promise. For example, we have all made a promise to follow the four regulative principles and to chant 16 rounds and attend all the programs. So we have to stick to this very rigidly. It's our promise. What is there? How can we live with others if nobody trusts us? Our whole community is based upon trust, faith, love. So each and every one of us is as good as we keep our promises. In fact, there is a group in America now, a group of Christians, who are trying to get back to the original Christian values. They're quite fed up, quite disgusted with the trend of liberalism and gross materialism, and they're trying to get back to the original biblical lifestyle. And it's not a small group. There are millions of them in America. Recently, a couple of 100,000 of them marched on Washington. They call themselves the Promise Keepers. That's the name of their group, the Promise Keepers. In other words, we have to keep our promises. So Lord Ramchandra, he worshipped his father for keeping his promise, even though it meant that Ramchandra had to give up his opulence. He had to give up his beautiful palace. He had to give up all of the servants that he had in the palace. He had to give up the opulent foods that he was accustomed to eating. He had to give up the horses and chariots and all the untold wealth that was within the kingdom, within the palace of Dasarath. And he had so many beautiful sets of clothes, we cannot imagine. Imelda Marcos was nothing with her 200 pairs of shoes. But she was nothing compared to Lord Ramchandra's wardrobe. It was part of his being a king. It was expected. People like their kings to have opulence. And, of course, Dasarath was a very powerful king, and so many other kings paid homage to him, worshipped him, respected him. So he got tribute from them, and that he distributed to his sons. So Lord Ramchandra gave up all of that and put on the skin of trees, tree bark, and walked in the forest barefoot. And I don't know how many of you have been on Govardhan Parikrama. Anybody here has been on Govardhan Parikrama? It's a little hard on the feet, right? You have to go barefoot. And there are so many stones and needles, prickles. So Lord Ramchandra was walking everywhere in the forest, and we may come from the villages or the country or whatever it is, and our feet may be a little tough, but Lord Ramchandra's feet were just soft, like fluffy ball, or I don't know how to describe his feet, but very soft. So he was prepared to follow the principles of Dharma, even if it meant great difficulty. So we have to If we want a better society, if we want a better world to live in, then we have to be prepared to undergo some austerity. Not ordinary austerity, but Divya. Rishabh Dev, his sons were about to become emperors of the whole world. Rishabh Dev was the greatest emperor, and he had 100 sons, and he was dividing his kingdom amongst his sons. They would assume the throne, and they would accrue or get great opulence. So he advised them that before you do this, nayana deho deha bhajan riloke kastan kaman arte vidbujame, don't get distracted by the same kind of happiness which is available to every animal. We're animals. We eat, sleep, mate, and defend. These are characteristics, these are habits of all animals. So we're animals also. We have an animal nature. We have to eat, sleep, and mate, and defend. It's part of our makeup, part of our constitution. And spiritual life doesn't deny these things. In fact, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, these are the religious activities. One can fulfill his material desires by dharma viruddha, by following the rules and regulations of scripture. One can satisfy his needs for artha, even kama, even moksha. One must take to the proper process, not that we try to satisfy our material needs independently. So Lord Ramchandra, he had great respect for dharma, and we also have to have this kind of respect, and we will also be an example. Yad yad acharati shrestas tatad evitaro janaha se yad pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. The important thing in this verse is lokastad anuvartate. We can't expect that many people will become pure devotees of Krishna. If you're thinking you're joining the most popular movement in the world, please forget that. ISKCON will never be popular in terms of numbers of followers. It's not possible. It's possible, but highly unlikely. Because people are heavily conditioned in the material world, and for them to make so much of a sacrifice, very difficult. As I said, Rishabh Dev advised his sons to give up the enjoyment of the vidbujam, the stool eaters. Unfortunately, most people in the world are attached to this vidbujam business, stool eating. Wet stool or dry stool, it's all stool. Material happiness, the highest form of material happiness is sex. And Yamunacharya said, Yadavadi mama cheta Krishna padaravinde navanava rasa damanudyata rantumasit, that every time I think of sex, I turn my head and spit in disgust. What's the matter with him? Doesn't he know that sex is good? No, he knows that when you enjoy sex, you get entangled in such a way that you suffer tremendously. You get a little chupple of soup, you get some flickering enjoyment, but it's simply akasha pushpa, it's simply phantasmagoria, it's simply a flickering thing. And you pay such a high price for it, just like most of our devotees. I've seen, especially in Hare Krishna's zone, they all buy their computers in New York, because if they had to buy them in Europe, you pay double the price. And why should you pay double the price for the same machine? Why should we pay double the price for happiness which we can get very nicely by following the path which Lord Krishna himself came and showed us? God himself came and showed us how to be devotees. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahe Anya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Radha and Krishna himself, Sakshat, Sri Krishna directly. And he's come, apani achari bhakti shikaimu shabare. I come to teach by my own example. So we also have to teach others by our example. This is a special mission. ISKCON is just like we know that in the middle of Kali Yuga there's great darkness, but what is that verse? The Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Svadamo Pagate Dharma Jnana Dibi Saha Puranarko Dunoditaha. How does that go? Kalo Drishta Kalo Nasta Drisha. Yeah, it destroys the darkness. It brings the light, Srimad Bhagavatam. And similarly, the ISKCON movement is giving people some idea how to achieve real happiness. We're only here for a short time, but still, we have tremendous opportunity. Prahlad Maharaj said that we should start Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life, because the human form of life is temporary, but it does offer a wonderful opportunity. So while we're here for 100 years or so, we have to follow in the footsteps of famous, spotless devotees like Lord Ramchandra, like Markandeya Rishi, like Yudhisthira Maharaj, and of course our object of glorification is the Supreme Lord, Lord Ramchandra. Similarly, those who follow in his footsteps, Sanjaya, his conclusion at the end of the Bhagavad Gita was that wherever there is Krishna, the supreme yogi, Yogeshwar, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, Dhanurdhar, there will always be victory, opulence, success in every way. So it all depends on whether or not we have made that commitment and whether or not we are prepared to appreciate that this Sokyam, this Brahma Sokyam, is superior to sense gratification. Param drishtva It is a higher taste, so it takes a little cultivation. Something like wine tasting or something. Wine tasters, they've trained their taste buds to discriminate between this kind of wine and that kind of wine. They can actually take some wine in their mouth, swish it around, and then they can tell you it's from 1927, from the northern part of the vineyard. They're actually expert like that because they trained their taste buds. So we can train ourselves to enjoy transcendental happiness. Happiness in the mode of goodness, and then happiness in transcendental goodness. But it really does take a commitment. There's a saying in Africa that it takes a village, a whole village, to raise a child. In other words, everybody in the village has to be nice to children and help them to develop good qualities, etc. So similarly, it takes an institution to raise a new bhakta. We all have to be community. We're Krishna-centered. We think in a very big way, think globally, but work locally. We think in terms of the mission of Krishna consciousness, spreading book distribution all over the world and building a huge temple in Mayapur, which will one day be the most famous temple in the world, where millions of people will come to hear about and learn about the science of Krishna consciousness. We have these big, big goals, but we also have to think, or rather work, locally. And we have to think of every person in our community as a link in the chain, right from a new person who's just getting accustomed to devotional service to even the old folks. You have to think about us sometimes too, and help us. And so the chain is as strong as the weakest link. So every one of us can. There's a saying in the Marine Corps. You've heard of the Marine Corps, the American military, the Marine Corps. So in times of peace especially, they have to do a lot of marketing and a lot of advertising, because there are very few people who want to join the Marine Corps in a time of peace, because you don't want to be doing drill and exercises, and you want to be out enjoying peace or whatever. So they have to make a lot of propaganda to get new people. So one of their most famous advertisements is, be everything you can be. Join the Marine Corps and be everything you can be. In other words, develop your potential fully. Become a real man, a real person, and develop your potential fully. So we should also, that's our propaganda, also be the very best you can as a devotee. And you can go as far as you want to go on your way back to Godhead by this good association. But you have to be both independent and interdependent on the community. No one is going to make spiritual advancement for you. There's no You can't depend, like in India, people depend on their wives. They say, my wife does the puja in our house. All the time we hear that. Swamiji, I want to show you where my wife does puja. I'm too busy making money, but, you know, I'm satisfied that my wife is doing the puja. Doesn't work like that, even in a family. Nobody, at the time of death, you have to stand on your own two feet, or kneel on your own two knees, or whatever it is. You're dependent upon your own self. So you have to be prepared to take responsibility. You have to be independent of everyone. Once, Srila Prabhupada was talking, and this is an important lesson, please hear me. Srila Prabhupada was talking with some devotees about how everyone in the material world will cheat you. People are totally selfish, and they may appear to be glorifying you or giving you facility or even being friendly, but behind everything, behind the curtain, behind the scene, everyone is materially motivated. They're selfish. They want I, me, and mine. We think of ourselves first. So, ultimately, if it gets down to a competition for sense gratification, then jivo jivasya jivana. The weak are ruled by the strong. Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatushpatam. Falguni tatra mahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. One living being is food for another. That's the way this world is. So Prabhupada was saying that in the pursuit of control, people try to control material nature, they try to control others. So in order to do that, they will cheat you. So he was going on like that, and then the devotees said, only you won't cheat us, Prabhupada. And everybody's feeling good that they had said something spiritual, and Prabhupada said, no. He said, I will also cheat you. So, of course, Prabhupada said that out of humility, but also there was a meaning to what he said. We have to individually, and you know, if I could look at each and every one of you in the eyes right now simultaneously, I would look you in the eyes and I would say, you have to become spiritually strong. Otherwise, spiritually weak means birth after birth after birth, and more suffering. And who's responsible? You're responsible. You want to suffer? Go ahead. If you want to get strong, then do it. Get strong. Take shelter of Krishna. Every time you try your very best to please Krishna, you get a little stronger. Just like if 3 weeks from now I were to go out and play football again, I bet I'd be even better than I was yesterday. My muscles were stretched and they're sore right now. But they come back stronger, actually. That's the theory of weightlifting, that you rip your muscles. You stretch and rip your muscles, then they build up again, and next time you're stronger until you've got muscles all over your body, and even on your head you got muscles. See some of these weightlifters. But the principle is that every time you try to please Krishna, you don't lose anything, you gain. And you can become strong enough to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. And you can't depend upon others, because everything here is just so uncertain. We've seen in our own institution how even big leaders have had spiritual difficulty. We feel very, very sorry about that, but we have to go on. Because, you know, if they can't save us, then we better try and save them. But somehow or other, we've got to get back to Godhead. Got to get out of this material world. So, yad yad acharati shrestas. We have to, the leaders have to be strong. The devotees have to follow. This is called interdependence. Independently, you can choose to follow or not follow. That is your independence. So you voluntarily agree to follow in the footsteps of the great devotees. That is called interdependence. Ultimately, you know that you're going to Krishna. You're not following. Your goal is not the spiritual master. You don't go back to spiritual masterhead. You go back to Krishna head, Godhead. The spiritual master helps you. He's your guide. And the spiritual master is not a cult leader that we fall in love with because he plays the mridanga nicely or something. Or, you know, he gives good speeches or whatever. He's attractive to us, but he's helping us go to Krishna. And we have to keep focused on that. And we hope for the very best. But we should be prepared that this is the material world. Lord Ramchandra and Lakshman, when they were fighting with Ravana, they were both smashed down on the field by the son of Ravana. Indrajit, yes, and his snake weapon. He shocked them, caught them off guard. And so all the devotees were just heartbroken. They didn't know what to do. They started to lose in the fighting until Hanuman brought the medicine and brought Lord Ramchandra back to life. So we have to be prepared for everything, but we have to fix our minds on going back to Godhead. So I've said enough. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah?
And we have some big material experience. We developed a great enthusiasm for serving Krishna, but that enthusiasm is very short, and after a while it becomes going down. And how to keep it on the level?
Keep associating with enthusiastic devotees. We have, again, it's the same thing. We all have 24 hours in a day. We all have 365 days in a year. We all have the same amount of time. The only thing we really have in life is our time. And we choose how we're going to use it. So I know you've got to get a college degree so you can get married and, you know, have children and this and that, nice job. I know you have all these other priorities. Well, that's your choice. If you want to be enthusiastic, you've got to adjust your life in some way that you can always be surrounded by enthusiastic devotees. And really, it's a question of enthusiastic, katayantascha mam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha. They enliven one another. It's not like there's just one enthusiastic devotee and everybody else is unenthusiastic, but they inspire each other. We're all capable of being very ecstatic and happy and enlivened. And we all have different kinds of days. You know, one day one guy's high and the rest of the group are a little down. The next day somebody else is, you know, it's his birthday or, you know, he's inspired. So, but you have to spend your time somehow or other with enthusiastic devotees so you can remain enthusiastic. The most important thing in your life should be your spiritual life. Even if you get married, have children, family, business, this, that, the other thing, those things are all fine, but they're secondary. If you didn't do them, it wouldn't force you to have another material body. But if you don't become Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter if you have a job and 50 kids and 10 wives and whatever material opulences you want. Lord Ramchandra considered all of these opulences as insignificant. And who had more opulence than him? He would know whether opulences were important in life or not. He was ready to drop them just like some hot stool. You pass stool and get up and walk away, you know. You don't, in India, there's the stool fields. And people pass stool, I mean, it's a bodily function. They pass stool in the field. They don't keep it in their house and, you know, wash it around the pipes in the house. But they have a separate area, quite practical. But they don't live in the stool fields. They pass stool and get up and walk away. So Lord Ramchandra, he thought all of these things are like hot stool. Just leave them behind. I'm not attached to them. Prabhupada calls gold, you know, the metal that everyone's attracted to. Everyone wants to be decorated with gold. Gold jewelry, gold earrings, gold watches, gold this, gold that. So Prabhupada calls it yellow stool. It's yellow stool, that's all. So you have to be prepared to make the first, to keep the first thing the first thing. That's really it. Well, it means that if you don't keep your promises, you're actually destroying yourself. Because deep in your heart, there is a conscience. You may not know it, but it is there. All of us have a conscience, or we can say the soul. The soul is there, and the soul is giving us instruction. What is the right thing to do? And truthfulness is one of the most important legs of Dharma. In fact, in Kali Yuga, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy are finished. Only truthfulness remains. And that also is shaky. Not much truthfulness, but it's important. So, if you go on hypocritically lying or making promises you can't keep. Sometimes there's two things. There's deliberate lies, and there are lies which we make because we're irresponsible. Lies which we, what do? You make a lie, which we tell, okay. We tell a lie in the sense that we make a promise to someone, but we haven't planned in our mind how we're going to keep that promise. We just do it at that time to get some advantage or to pacify someone so that they won't disturb us. So we make a promise. I'll meet you tomorrow. We know we're not even going to be anywhere near there tomorrow, and there's no chance we can meet them, but we make a promise. I promise I'll meet you tomorrow and help you with your problem. So that's another kind of cheating. So what happens is that your strength, your will to do the right thing becomes your muscles, your willpower muscles become weaker, and it reflects in all your other activities. You become a liar to others, and you start lying to yourself also. And you promise yourself you'll chant your rounds, but you can't do it. You're used to breaking promises with others, so you break your own promise. You promise to follow the principles, to not go to a movie or not watch television. You fix your mind, I'm promising myself. But because you're accustomed to cheating others, you also cheat yourself. So I'll tell you a secret. Okay. This is a little revelation, sometimes it's good, it's not bad to tell people things. I took sannyas a long time ago, 1975, and a sannyasi has a ticket to ride. He travels all over the world and preaches, and somehow or other Krishna arranges for his plane fare or traveling or whatever. So pretty much since 1975, for a good portion of every year, I've done a lot of traveling. And what happens is, wherever you go, they give you some nice room to stay because you're every day or every week a new place. You need something peaceful so you can just fix your mind and do your job of preaching. So I'll go to one place, and there's a nice room, a nice desk, and this and that. And I may see in that room there's a nice little picture that I don't have that someone has there, or I don't know, some other thing. And in the beginning I thought, oh, this is convenient, everything belongs to Krishna, let me take. And I was stealing things wherever I would go. Not big things, but things were just, I wanted them for my service, and I thought, But gradually I began to realize that I was hurting myself. I was cheating myself. And I began to realize that if Krishna wants me to have this nice picture, or Krishna wants me to have that, or whatever it may be, there's no need to steal from others. Krishna can make arrangements for anything that I actually need. And then there's the other option. I can just ask for it. Rather than steal it, I can just ask, honestly, I'd like to have that. And, seven times, six times out of ten, you'll get it. There's no need to lie, no need to steal, no need to cheat. If you haven't got an extra copan, don't steal somebody else's copan. Krishna will give you one. Extra dhoti or whatever. I'll tell you, simplicity, purity, honesty, truthfulness, cleanliness, these are all the best qualities for your happiness and your peace of mind and everything. Change over, you know. Make the jump.
Yeah. We make a promise, but then things have changed. And then we say, sorry, but the things have changed, I cannot do. So how far...
See, Dasarath didn't do that. He didn't say, Kaikeyi, I'm sorry, things have changed now. He stuck to his word. He kept his promise. As far as he could, he really went out of his way to keep his promise. And I personally think that if we make promises to people, and I'll tell you this about leaders. There's a story in the Bible. I've got to read it someday, but I've just heard about it before. It's the story of, maybe someone can help me, Jesus and is a shepherd. It's something, a parable about the 99 and the one. Does anybody know that story? They're like, there's the shepherd who has 100 sheep, and one of the sheep wanders away from the flock, and the shepherd goes off to find that lost sheep. He leaves the 99 and he goes off to find that one lost sheep. Now, someone may say, well, you know, he should take care of the welfare of the 99. Why should he run off after just one? But, more or less, the 99 were not in trouble. But that one sheep who really needed the shepherd's guidance, He took the trouble to go and find that sheep. And then all the 99 saw that if I ever get in trouble, then the shepherd will come after me too. And that was such a great lesson that, you know, the sheep were really inspired. But it's an expression, the 99 and the one. And leaders have to set an example. They may not do a lot of things, but it's those symbolical things where they go out of their way to do the right thing. They're courageous, they're not afraid, and they do the right thing for the right reason at the right time in the right way, and everybody sees, oh, he's a good leader, he can take care of us, he knows. So I think keeping promises is important, and somehow or other, if you find yourself in an awkward situation, then you have to either make sure that both parties are fully satisfied, or you just have to keep your promise, and maybe there'll be some loss on the other side, but the example that you set by keeping your promise will be much greater gain for everyone than the loss that you experience by perhaps not adjusting to a changing circumstance. Integrity, it's called integrity, and probably character and integrity are really the fruit of devotional service. That's what people look to see. What they're not so much interested in our philosophy. They're interested in what kind of people our philosophy turns us into. Are we men and women of character and strength and purity? Or are we just speaking some nice words, but actually we're just the same as everybody else. Yes. Well, again, I probably told you this story, but I'll tell it again. Yes. So, I'm sure I told you, right? It was the final days in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada was very, very ill. It was only maybe a couple of weeks before he left the world. And he called one of his disciples, Giridhar Swami. Didn't call him at 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 10 o'clock in the morning. He called him at 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the morning, early in the morning. Prabhupada was thinking. And called Giraj, servant woke him up, said, Prabhupada wants to see you. So Giraj came down to meet Srila Prabhupada and offered his obeisances. And then Prabhupada immediately asked, without any other thing, he said, do you think that this movement will go on after I go? And Giridhar Swami said, yes, Srila Prabhupada, if your disciples chant nicely and follow your instructions and preach Krishna consciousness, then I think it will go on, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada didn't even listen to him, because as soon as he stopped talking, Prabhupada commented, good organization and management. So those things are important. What do you think? You. Yeah. Was that your question? Yeah. Good organization means spiritual organization. It doesn't mean materialistic organization. I get very upset with people who try to say that the leaders who are organizing book distribution, the leaders who are organizing big festivals, the leaders who are organizing nice temples and nice schools and seminars, this is all material. What we really need to do is go to Vrindavan or go anywhere and just hear Krishna Katha all day long. This is really spiritual. Because that's a totally mundane way of looking at the activities which are designed to engage everyone in Krishna service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very industrious. He personally went door to door in Bengal asking everyone to give at least 1 rupee to build Lord Chaitanya's temple. And he personally went all over Navadvip, all over Mayapur, all over Bengal, visiting various holy places and renovating various spiritual holy places, writing so many books, doing so many activities. And Bhakti Siddhanta also was very active in spreading and expanding his mission. And in fact, there was one manager. His name was, of course, ultimately he became known as Bhakti Vilas Tirtha Maharaj. But originally he was known as Kunja Babu. He was a businessman. Babu in Bengali generally means. Prabhupada was also known as Abhay Babu. Babu means a businessman. So when Bhakti Siddhanta was in Mayapur practicing austerity, it was Kunja Babu who came and invited Bhakti Siddhanta to come to Calcutta for some preaching programs, and he said, I will organize so many preaching engagements for you. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji had told Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, never go to Calcutta, never leave Mayapur. Calcutta is Maya. So Bhakti Siddhanta left Mayapur and went to Calcutta. So why did he do that? Well, first of all, in his heart and in his mind, he was always in Mayapur. And there's deep meaning in that. But at the same time, he went because there were so many opportunities for preaching. Once the guru of Ramanujacharya gave him a mantra and said, this is a very powerful secret mantra. Don't tell it to anyone. It's very powerful for liberation. So then Ramanuja received the mantra, and as soon as he could, he went to the biggest marketplace, and he began to shout out the mantra so everyone could hear it. And when his guru heard about that, he was very angry. He said, don't you know, I told you not to reveal this mantra to anyone. And Ramanuja said, yes, you did, and I disobeyed you. And I'm prepared to accept your punishment. But you also told me that this mantra would free one from the cycle of birth and death. So I'm prepared to go to hell, but let others hear the mantra and be blessed. So Bhakti Siddhanta understood the importance of preaching, and at a certain stage when his mission grew, his Gaudiya Mutt had grown, he had many sannyasis, but the main organizer was a grihastha, the same Kunja Babu. Now this Kunja Babu, he was taking a salary from the mutt. It was some 4,000 rupees at that time, which was a lot of money. In today's inflation, 4,000 rupees 200 years ago, or 100 years ago, I guess. It was a lot of money, 4,000 rupees. So all of the sannyasis started talking, and they made a little committee, and they went to Bhakti Siddhanta and they said that, you know, this Kunja Babu has taken too big a salary, we want to remove him. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, you can all go home and I will stay. And the point is, he supported this manager who could actually do something. It's not the standard that one should take a large salary. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is that our activities of managing the Krishna consciousness movement are spiritual. They're providing facility that everyone can hear the holy names of Krishna and get some prasadam, get a book, and learn more about spiritual life. If we practice our principles nicely, our management will naturally be better. Material qualifications We could organize. Prabhupada said about, we have a big temple in Bombay, and we also at that time had a big temple in Vrindavan. So when the Bombay construction was going on, Prabhupada mentioned that one intelligent devotee can organize a dozen fools and do some good work. So as long as the top leaders of the community are pure and Krishna conscious, they can engage even outsiders, even in some ways non-devotees. We in India, we have non-devotee accountants, we use non-devotee lawyers, we use non-devotee construction workers, we use non-devotee, as we would consider them, non-devotee in the strict sense, cooks in our restaurant. We have non-devotee, we have in Bombay, we have about 125 employees. But people come there and they hear the sweet kirtan in the temple and their lives are changed. And they think, oh, this place is very clean, well organized, I like this temple. So there's a place for everything, and there is a need for a strong work ethic, a good management ethic. Purity is the force, but utility is the principle. You have to balance those two. Purity is the force, but utility is very much the principle. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.